I don't know what to do when I'm on the same pod as you. Give me the code, tell me which chat you use. I'll make sure I'm not on your Zoom. Because I'm not. This is Meet. This is Google Meet. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the most electrifying, must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. Welcome to FFC. I am your host, the ghost with the most, Damian Ellinghouse, accompanied as always by good friend and lover of the paranormal, Ryan Doyle.
How are you, sir?
I'm dead.
Dead?
That's what I did there.
I'm feeling a spirit. I feel he's a man,
uh-huh,
of 30 years old.
Uh-huh.
He's a Hampson Devil.
Okay.
He's in a band.
Hmm.
They just came out with a new release.
Okay.
I'm feeling a fisherman presence. There's a fisherman sound familiar to you, Damian?
Is it Jim Morrison?
It's Jim Morrison, ladies and gentlemen. That's right.
Yay. Celebrating the Doors' 55th anniversary of their first album. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the pod the most political Islander fan. That's not true. No one can take that cake.
Which spectrum are you talking about?
That's true. Which spectrum? The most leftward, politically active,
socially conscious
also
Islander
is
fan.
In a band and is an Islander fan at the same time. Desmond Zantua. Desmond, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's nice to be back. I was surprised you didn't call me the Filipino American nightmare.
Yeah, well, that would have is that for me to give you? Am I allowed to give you that one?
I'll let you know. I'll at the next quarterly convention, I'll let you know what the acceptable language is.
Yeah, please do, because I don't know if that's for me to give you a name like that. So let me know what the local charter has to say first.
Yes, I'll look into it for sure. But
all right, so we had been wanting to have Desmond on for some time now, and some things got in the way of that, but it ends up being a little fortuitous as you're now here. Your band has just dropped its first full length, Where We've Always Been. This dropped the 11th, it was 5 days ago at time of recording.
The 12th.
So now we were fortunate enough to hear some of the tracks before drop, and I gotta say I was really raring to talk about them, to have the NDA lifted, so to speak, which I did not use podcast funds for. So I will be in good standing with the FCC.
If someone wants to FOIA that, you know, spend the money.
Go ahead.
It's your money.
I've done nothing wrong. In fact, I encourage you to unseal the documents that were planted at the podcast headquarters.
That's right. Damien has his
references for days.
Damien has his 50 pack of multicolored Memorex CDs to copy and spread career day everywhere.
So, Desmond, I want to kick right off into talking about this, and then because this isn't the Desmond Plugs Only His Own Shit podcast, we'll talk about our shit as well, but mostly his shit. In a positive light. So, everybody, what are we drinking today?
Guest?
Do I?
No, Ryan doesn't. Ryan doesn't go first.
Okay. So, okay, I am drinking. A lot of our album takes a flamethrower to Long Island, but I do have a Montauk summer ale in my hand here. I like that they at least tried to support Black Lives Matter. I didn't do that. Didn't go all the way. Did not cross the goal line.
If you turn it upside down, would liquid come out?
Well, I'm not gonna.
All right.
So.
Yep.
But yeah, Montauk, I like that they, I like the beer. I like that even though they're heart of, well, not the heart of Suffolk, they're the at the end of Suffolk.
The tail, the ass of Suffolk.
The tail.
Southern New England.
The tail. I like that they appreciated that they at least voiced support for Black Lives Matter summer 2020. That was nice. I also just like the summer ale. So that's why I got it.
Okay, very good. Now, Ryan, you can go.
I have an UFO white.
Ooh, UFO.
Interesting.
Also, now, Northern New England.
Northern New England. And I love that UFO got so popular that at some point it was like, we're not Harpoon anymore. We do our own thing.
Dude,
now.
That's a great point because I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, it's UFO is now its own special little, I don't know if it's like an imprint under it or some shit like Sea Dog, but it's great either way. I have a beer, but it's from Oma Gang and I drank it before. So instead, I also want to help celebrate, really pick up Long Island. So I've got a wine spritzer. That's what I've got. I've got a rainbow wine spritzer.
Wild card.
This is from Cool Cat. Packed by three cool cats in Sonoma, California. And this is white wine, water, sugar, natural flavors, and citric acid. It's berry.
Yeah.
So
Sonoma, Long Island.
Yeah. Yeah. Sonoma, Long Island, Northern Connecticut, Long Island. And,
did you say it was from Long Island? My bad.
No, I said California.
Oh,
I said it out loud.
You said you're going to lift up Long Island.
Yeah. Because it's like wine. It's a wine spritzer. Like how we've got wine out. Whatever. I'm just. Drink your beer.
Oh, okay. Ah, that's a really good summer ale, man.
That's fine. That's a fine. It's a fine wine spritzer, I guess.
Fine spritz.
It's a spritz.
Is there not enough spritz?
You don't seem enthused.
Wine sucks. Wine sucks. I did it for the meme of it all, but like with all memes, it wasn't funny enough to justify. So I'll just drink it and then I'll drink the actual beer afterwards.
Nice.
Wine drunk is such a sloppy ass fucking drunk, man.
It really is.
It's like there's no right moment for it. You have it with dinner and then it's just like, cool, I have to sit here for the next 2 hours with my family, just wine drunk on red wine. What's going to happen?
It makes me think of that scene in Forgetting Sarah Marshall where they meet up with Russell Brand and Kristen Bell and then drink like 12 bottles of wine and get just more and more awkward before Jason Segel. Well, I don't want to spoil the movie for
you. Of course, yes.
It's a rollicking good time. So, Desmond, let's get straight into this. So, I told myself I wasn't going to say that phrase anymore. And I didn't start off this podcast by saying this phrase, and now I am. So
let's just dive right into it.
Yeah, let's get right into it here. So obviously, like we said, this is your band's first LP, and if memory serves, is this the first full length that you've put out, or at least put out in some time?
It's the first. Yeah, it's full length. I've ever worked on. So. It has been, it's honestly felt like the thing that I've wanted. Having an album period is something that I've thought of since I was like, I don't know, a 16-year-old, 17-year-old kid, like thinking like, you know, I spend my whole life listening to Blink-182 and Alkaline Trio and Newfound Glory and Taking Back Sunday all the time. What if I like wrote my own things, and what if I had an album out? And I never got the chance to before, but it's great to have gotten to do this. And it sounds like everything I've wanted to put onto a track that was never able to do so until now.
there's something special about like making an album for sure. I've only ever made one full length myself as well, except for like a grindcore album, but like none of those are full length anyway. So, you know, it's the rule, the world is ruled by EPs because nobody can afford to do anything different. So you always hope that your first album is a special one. And you, instead of starting off with the awkward phase, jumped straight into what I'm considering your artistic peaking. Not peak. That implies that it's all downhill from here, which is a Newfound Glory reference. I'm on fire today.
Newfound Glory.
but you're coming into this riding real high, and the band's had two releases prior to this, five songs, I believe, released publicly.
Yeah.
Than doubling that easily with this now.
For sure. Yeah. And the Nope Sorry, like, you know, two songs that we put out all the way back in 2018 is with a different lineup. So like it's, and like different, like core, I guess, writing group. Whereas last year's Pride Was Somewhere Else EP was written with Jacob, our guitarist, Andrew, our bassist, and Brian, our former drummer, that was the last holdover from the Nope Sorry demo. But it's this is, so in a way, this is kind of Career Day almost has like a demo version. It was a demo, an EP that's a demo that in a way was just a demo of the concept of the project, which, so it's kind of slightly, it's like a release 2.5, I guess you could call mm-hmm. it.
Well, it tracks perfectly because this is, so I feel that people listening to this, you get a lot of the influences that we know you're inspired by, right? You hear a lot of similarities in some of your hooks with Motion City soundtrack, Newfound Glory. You mentioned Taking Back Sunday. You hear that in a little bit of the riffing and the vocal layering. But what I found really cool about this album is twofold, right? So the first one, from a sonic perspective, it's kind of an album that is rooted very much in like 90s emo and like late 90s, early 2000s pop punk, but in such a way where it's almost more reminiscent of like 80s emo in the way that Jacob approaches some of the way that he writes his songs, with how prominent the bass is. And particularly with some of the subject matter, right? So, but we'll get to subject matter in a second. Is this a situation where Jacob comes to you with a fully fleshed out song and you put words to it, or how collaborative is the process?
So, especially on this album, the process was very collaborative in terms of, so most of the album was written in between, I would say, like, I guess as soon as we were occasionally meeting up to bounce song ideas off of each other in like maybe June, 2020. From there to like June, 2021. But we had two songs written before, like we wrote two songs almost entirely in the, practice space, that are two of the three singles, No Problem and If Only. We wrote those right before, like early 2020, right before the pandemic hit. And those were like two songs that kind of came together. I think they were probably riffs that Jacob had been playing around with for a bit, and we shaped those into songs. But like the rest of it was Jacob and I meeting up, to work on, you know, he'd have different riff ideas, I'd have different lyric ideas, and usually I, because I can, you know, if I don't need to use the exact words or lyrics that I've written, I can just kind of vibe off of the topic or whatever and, right. and shift it if there are certain aspects of it that I hear in certain riff melodies. But, you know, most of the songs like were built up like as a skeleton, just one guitar and one vocal. And then, you know, we'd bring it to the rest of the band and they would react, you know, getting the drum and bass would sometimes it would just fit perfectly into place. And other times it would change actually the way we were just approaching the riffs and melodies to begin with. And it was just so it was like a super vetted, like filtered writing process where, you know, by the time we got to the studio, songs had been like some of them had been internally demoed. Everything was at least demoed, even if it didn't have vocals, but like demoed instrumentally, just, you know, via whatever garage band or program was needed. But these songs were like thought through probably at least three times before we even got to the studio. And then all the things inherently with like songs kind of changing in the studio. So it was like these songs, the attitude that we had was like, if we can make the song better, we will. But we also are being mindful of like, if it rocks, let's not, you know, overthink rocking.
Yeah. It's definitely easy to overthink shit when you're in that, especially when the songs have existed for so long. You know, I can relate. The last EP that I put out myself, songs had been kicking around for 3-4 years. A band had broken up and gotten back together. So it's easy to second guess yourself. Ryan, I'm curious from your perspective, right? Because Ryan, like myself, listens to all sorts of genres and he's no stranger to punk, but he does come from a little bit of a different place. So Ryan, what did you think when you heard this? Like from a sonic perspective, what were you coming up with?
Sonically, I was more commenting on the lyrical aspect, but sonically, I really got just a very, you know, where pop punk stands today, you guys, it really fits like a glove, you know? It just seems that you're coming out on the back end of sort of like the shape of pop punk to come, you know, like where it exists today, because it's sort of at a weird point where you can call it post pop punk, but I think it's just everybody trying to figure out, and it doesn't stretch, like it's going into hardcore now too. Metal's kind of just like whatever at this point, but like hardcore and pop punk, they're really experiencing a revitalization from a lot of younger artists and a lot of younger bands, but also they're taking the opportunity of, okay, not staying relevant, but how do we stay, you know, how does our sound stay relevant to
push the genre forward?
Exactly.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah. So whereas, you know, we were talking about the Oso Oso track and, you know, it sounds like, you know, he's like a 30-year veteran of the game doing this. Like you guys really, you know, you're not coming at it from a 2008 Warped Tour perspective. You're coming at it from a 2022, not to label you this, but like, you know, like a Pitchfork aspect to it, like a thinking man's pop punk, if that makes sense.
I like that, scratching my chin. But no, for sure. I don't know. For me, it was, it felt like the years before the pandemic, it was so frustrating the way pop punk bands were constantly able to, the way pop punk bands had the perfect opportunity to influence their fans, but many of them first time voting age kids, influenced them to get involved in shit or take on the shit going on in their own country, but they didn't, and that I found that so bothersome because, like, I know all these bands, all they do is just live on Twitter. So I know that they're seeing everything that's going on. And it was always just weird for me, like, during those years I was working at the ACLU, like, just knowing what kind of fucked up shit goes on, you know, with cops on Long Island, with cops in the city, the military, it is so jarring that it felt like increasingly like alienating, that like seeing how real shit was getting, for lack of a thinking man's term, for how real shit has been, and was just becoming more prominently understood on a mainstream level. The fact that bands were still seemingly living like it was 2005, which is fitting because that was when they were ignoring the Iraq War. So, like,
well, one point I wanted to make about that was you're definitely not wrong in that aspect, that there was an unanswered call by a lot of, you know, not necessarily in music, but artists in general, to where they really needed to stand up and comment on a lot of issues. 2016, but honestly, let's face it, it was pretty much just after 2008. We kind of just took a back seat to a lot of things. Not our fault. We were going through a lot of shit, and we just came out of the back end of a fucking vicious decade. But, you know, like, I was introduced to a lot of great punk due to, you know, the vocal opposition to the Iraq War, especially, like, you know, the war on terrorism, anti-flag.
Iraq against Bush came out
right,
like 2003,
you know, where it was just like, these days you like, where's the music backing this up? And I know in this day and age of fucking Daily Show and all those generic ass fucking talk shows where it's just like, haha, Orange Man bad, but, you know, just extending beyond Trump, just a lot of social issues. It's just this, that music is the vehicle to drive that home. And it's definitely not progressing, and it's a very stagnant time.
And that's, you know, because the music is what's going to get you, right? The melodies, the genre itself, that's what's going to get you. But the meat of this album lies in its lyrics, right? The way that, you and Jacob bounce off one another, and the lyrical content, right? So to move on to the content, to Ryan's point, right, the album's name comes from the lyrics in It Never Ends, I Fear for Where We're Headed, Where We've Always Been. The idea that things are not systemically different from 20, 30, 40 years ago, but things are still spiraling. And exactly like Ryan said, there is a huge, it almost seems like an intentional lack of bringing up anything political from so many bands, unless they're like, we are a hardcore punk band, in which case, fine. Or if we are a fucking grindcore band, fine. But pop punk, it's almost as if at some point the genre decided to shed its roots, and they're like, we're only gonna take, like, we're just gonna be like Descendants' Lonely Girl, and that's the only topic subject matter that we want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, there's also on some level it feels like when things would be approached, it would typically be in the most vague, just dipping a toe in.
Yep.
You know, things are bad. Oh, uh-huh. The world is so crazy.
Solidarity.
But, like, never any...
I hate both sides.
Yeah, don't get played. But this album...
Do you believe in society's lies?
This album is one that does not shy away from direct confrontation with these issues where a lot of bands might not. So... the subject matter, are there songs about relationships? Sure. Are there songs about death? Sure. Are there the typical stuff you might expect from a pop punk album, yes. But you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, it's an album that's taking a flamethrower to Long Island. And what genre loves hating their hometown more than pop punk, modern day pop punk especially? But you did not go for the easy, low-hanging fruit of like, I hate suburbia, I need to get out of here. Your teardown of Long Island is much more like, oh, hey, isn't it crazy that like New Hyde Park didn't want to, you know, they wanted to keep segregation going after that shouldn't have been a thing anymore. And basically a good half the album, it takes place from this route. Views from the 516 being about Long Island. No problem coming from the idea of the right minority, right? The proper minority and what that's like to grow up in America. It never ends talking about how it never ends almost in a similar vein to Party's Over. The idea that like Ryan said, 2016, right? We band together and we do the things and we oppose. And then 2020 happens and shit didn't really get all that much different, but everyone's like, we did it. And they pat themselves on the back and they go home. So to make this an actual question that you can answer, obviously you are who you are. You're a political activist in your nature, and it's what you've done for a lot of your career. But did you guys have a concerted message that you wanted to get across in writing these songs? Or was it more like the free, you know, they gave you free rein to write what you write and it applies to who they want to apply it to?
Well, it was the best way to describe, like, the band encourages me to say whatever the hell I want, which risky business there, but hey, they made their bed. But like, it was very intentional that, I mean, you only get, writing an album is fucking hard.
Yep.
And, you know, with the pandemic, I kind of, you know, got in touch with Jacob to keep writing shit. One, especially because we had, like, we were sitting on No Problem and If Only, and, like, you know, just listening to, like, practice space recordings of, like, these are, like, songs. You only get so many chances to write an album. You only get so much, like, it's so hard to do, but it takes a lot of time. And with the pandemic, that was a opportunity to take time. That was seemingly a once in a lifetime opportunity. It was an opportunity to write or to make an opportunity out of it to write. And for me, with that in mind, with how hard it is to write an album, with, like, it was, you only get one chance to write a first album. You might not get to make one again. Say the things that you want to say, that if you don't get to write another song again, you said what you said in these songs. And that was such an obsession until it came out. With that in mind, it was like, if you only get so many chances to put out a first album, you know what? Say, lead off the album with the things that you want people to hear the most, because people's attention span, people have the access to music, but they also have the saturation from that access to disengage as quickly as possible. So it was very intentional.
That's a great way to put it, you know, and obviously, of course, you're not going to put out a product unless everybody believes in it. But like I said, I think that it's something that really separates you guys out, as well as the fact that, like we said earlier, you hear so many kind of unique influences and maybe influences that you didn't even intentionally put in. The way that you and Jacob bounce off one another makes me think of Deftones with the way that Chino and Steven bounce off one another. The riffing reminds me of like early, not early, they only existed for so long, but makes me think of bands like Rites of Spring more than it makes me think of bands like Jawbreaker.
Interesting.
And you know, Weatherbox as a more modern band is somebody that very much comes to mind with this as well. So in keeping in line with that, do you guys feel that it is important to relate yourself to the genre at large, like to Ryan's earlier point about pushing the genre forward? Just like it was intentional to say the thing that is important to say, you only get one chance to make your sound. A band's sound is always developing, but you had a ton of time to hone this sound. Do you guys feel like you have to keep pushing that for the sake of the genre to stay relevant, to make music that matters to people?
I think sounds and bands best evolve when they let what happens happen. I think sometimes bands overthink and over critique their process, in the sense of like needing to incorporate specific sounds or avoid specific sounds. And so for me, I think the genre doesn't need to necessarily evolve sonically. I think it's already evolved a bit in terms of, you know, the emo rap and the SoundCloud like influence that's come in, which is like, I think it's totally cool that exists, because at least it's trying a new thing, mm-hmm. with the form. I'm fine with it, even if most of it doesn't speak to me. It clearly speaks to some people, and I think that's overall a good thing. I think the pop punk sound will evolve if more bands are just speaking from a place of like perspective, like actual lived, ingrained perspective, rather than, I think a lot of bands sometimes are being an impression of a band.
Mm-hmm.
And where the narratives are just, and the presentation are very, again, that kind of just dipping a toe on the precipice of an idea and rather than going all the way. Not everything needs to be super political. And, you know, one of the things that we do at our shows is we have a QR code at our table that links to different advocacy links. I always change the Google Doc the day of or nearing the show as to reflect perhaps something that's going on in the general discourse, so that, you know, it's great to sing these songs, but it's more important to direct people at these shows beyond the spaces of the venue where they can participate in improving the conditions that bring us all this great angst to, in the first place. And I just got the 10-minute warning there. I think that was my complete thought. When more bands just have speak to and speak from places of impact, and two places of impact is important, but it's also literally changing the way we operate as artists, as opposed, like, I don't know, the social media posts and even the songs themselves don't directly impact the conditions, but those advocacy groups that are in every town and in every county that are working on this shit, that are, you know, have a Zoom meeting this week about some bill or something, like, there is value in pointing people in that direction.
That's a great point about advocating for the location where the venue is, because I don't think people really appreciate enough where you know, sometimes we go to see shows, it's not necessarily, you know, it's downtown, it's in a neighborhood where a venue is allowed to have, where it wouldn't be allowed to have in a more upscale neighborhood, you know. Riot Fest is currently going through this, where the Douglas Park in Chicago, not the best area, but the neighborhood is really kind of fed up at, because they're not the only festival within playing in the park, but they are the first festival this year playing in the park, and they pretty much have had enough of it because there's no kind of sustainable efforts post festival. And they did a really shitty job. Just they had like a community meeting, and they found like the most fucking tightwad business guy to try to discuss it with the community, and they had to apologize. It was just a mess. Yeah. So I think that's really, you know, recognize where you're able to see the show tonight.
Yeah, that's definitely probably the most critical thing you can do. Ryan, did you get my message? Just set up a Zoom in case I can't jump us back in.
Sure. One point I wanted to ask you, Desmond. I mean, I can't really comment on the other band members because I don't know them personally. But the lyrical content of this really reminded me of two things. It reminded me of Neil Young with After the Gold Rush. And
yeah, I told you. You didn't even notice. And you don't know your own influences.
Not the entirety of the book, because I know that you're not going across Las Vegas eating mescaline and going to cop conventions, but the wave speech from Fear and Loathing, where they're both similar in the aspect of they're recognizing the end of peace and love in the 60s, and they're predicting the oncoming malaise of the 70s. Unfortunately, the malaise of the 70s led to one of the most fascist time in our country in the 80s, but from a perspective of you, you know, we just went through a very tumultuous 2 years, and obviously your advocacy extends past that and beyond that, but do you sense a, because one track that really got to me in that aspect was Thank You for Listening, where you're commenting on the, hey friends, like, I know you're really jazzed about speaking out, but, you know, where are you today when, you know, the pan ain't necessarily hot? Do you think, you know, are you predicting a time of malaise in terms of that? You know, where do people go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there is a malaise. I mean, but I don't know. That song is a commentary on the simultaneous feeling I get of feeling burnt out on going so hard about all this shit all the time, and frustrated by, you know, feeling like, you know, how come other people aren't going as hard as this, like, you know, and calling that out, but also reconciling that how frequently do I come off like I am in a deeply, deeply low mental space? That's probably not the best calling card to leave people if you're trying to get them to join a movement and make a movement. And I think a lot of shit's up in the air right now. Like, I don't know if it's too late. I don't know if it's too late to, I mean, a lot of the It Never Ends is kind of a commentary on my rapidly thinning belief in nonviolence, or the belief in the viability of nonviolence and what that means and how that feels. But it feels like that's where we are, and I don't know what to do when the deck is so stacked, but I know that to turn off entirely and become a nihilist, or just become like a sarcastic nihilist that's just out for themselves and just out to have a good time, is just not the wave either. So, I mean, to be honest, I don't know what is to come. It doesn't feel great, but at the same time, I do feel that enough people are noticing that the kayfabe is dead, the kayfabe of the American dream, to get to a wrestling term, is kind of done with, and that you're closer to being on the street than you are to being your boss. And I am hoping that people actually hear whatever, however many alarms we have left. I hope enough people wake up in time.
Yeah, the point about kayfabe being dead and over is something that I think about a lot. Ryan and I talk about a lot, not just in the obvious wrestling context, but in the, like, you know, we come every bi-week, tri-week, quad week, whatever. We speak our silly songs about wrestling and the things we're upset about and the things we love, and like the world's dying all around us, and you know, it is hard to have the energy. And like myself as a social worker and being in school and being in a school like Silberman, where it's a social work program for social workers that want to hate social work. It's like every class you go in is like, your profession is actually the type of thing that keeps social norms going, and you are as responsible for this as all the fascists. So
welcome,
you know,
to the New York City Social Workers Department.
Yeah, good luck. Have a blast. It gets hard to talk about the entertainment, and it's why, even though your album is, this is not a necessarily inherently political album. You guys did not release this to have a specific message, like you said, in mind, to have a specific goal. You know, you're not propaganda or anti-flag coming out here like, we want to be known as this, but you're trying to make your mark, not just as a band, as individual musicians, as people. You're trying to make a mark however you can, while also still trying to enjoy yourself at the same time. And that's fucking hard.
Yes.
So we can relate to that all too well, but you know, for what it's worth, and this is also, if I'm not mistaken, Desmond, is this the first release on a label for you?
Yeah. Well, Pride Was Somewhere Else was put out on cassette by Solidarity Club Records. Awesome. Awesome label, shout out Greg. But this, where we've always been is being put out by Old Press Records, and they've been really cool. I know Tom at the label has worked on all sorts of climate activism stuff, so a lot of really good talks with him, Yeah, it's just, you know, that was it's nice to have some help with this, with that idea in mind of like, well, obviously we want these songs to be heard, and if all that ever comes from this is that we kick maybe give some pop punk and emo scene people a kick in the pants to not just post about things, but get engaged with different advocacy causes in a more ongoing material way that is, you know, everything. Therefore, having, you know, people that believe in us that want to help us get it out there and get it to more people, super super heartwarming, and just felt like a thing that, like, let's go for it, you know.
And it's deserved, because this is a release that, look, do I think that, you know, John in Arkansas is going to love the lyrical content of this? Maybe, because we don't judge based off of geography on this podcast. Got ya. Got him.
We don't forget about our red states.
Got him. But in seriousness, is this music that will speak to everybody? No. Is this music that will speak to every pop punk fan? No, but it is a kick in the pants that is needed, and it's something that is going to get to be put out there far better than if you were trying to release it yourself. And to have somebody that believes in the vision in this moment in time is what matters. And at the end of the day, it's a product to be extremely proud of. You know, I could spend the entire time of this podcast just asking you poorly written questions and go through each track by track. You know, no problem caught me immediately. I think that the first three songs start so strong. I think that 21,000 Questions is just a really, really excellent romance song. And
nailed it.
It's just an extremely strong album, and it's one that I hope that all of you are proud of. So we'll obviously give you your time to plug, but I guess before we move to some kayfabe related things, so you guys have got a couple of shows coming up, and like I said, we'll let you plug that. But I guess my most pressing question is, so who is or who has been filling in on drums? Do you guys have an established fourth member yet, or you kind of just filling in for now while you take a closer look?
We will be announcing that on the interwebs after the shows.
That's exciting.
Well,
this airs Friday, so, you know, it's still before shows.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I mean, we won't ask you to spill trade secrets. Unless you want to.
It's just,
we want the spices.
We want to give our friend a proper drop, as they call it, social media, new member drops,
yeah, sure.
type of situation. But he has the same first name as one of the people on this podcast.
Oh-ho! I didn't know there was a second. Damien! How exciting. Well, I guess everyone will just have to stay tuned on the socials for that. But a shout out to Brian McElwain, somebody I've known for a while and one of the premier drummers of the scene in Long Island, did an outstanding job on both of your releases.
Still good friends, just being an adult and fucking writing songs and doing band stuff is hard to juggle.
Yeah. It's not easy.
Desmond, are you worried when you go out on your reunion tour in 20 years that people are going to think that you were never about the things you spoke about?
Fucking poser.
Do
you think about the fragility of youth? Do you think about that often and think about how in 20 years you'll be a poser?
I mean, if I could be like a Henry Rollins type, quote unquote poser, where like, I get to I don't even have to do the band thing. I can kind of just do speaking words. Because spoken word feels like, you know, you do, has a poetic aspect.
Yeah, no,
to
he's just talking.
He's just speaking words.
Yo, I've never experienced 3 hours and 30 minutes go by so fast, though.
The Desmond Zantua speaking words tour.
Yeah.
If I could be that, that would be a beast. Because then don't even need to write songs or even work out into a structure.
Yep.
Just go out and talk.
Just talk. Just say whatever angry shit's on your mind.
Just tell stories about how you picked wildflowers with Iggy Pop and the Michigan fields, you know?
All the weird shit you and Ian McKay did in Washington, D.C. when you were working at an ice cream shop or whatever.
You know, I was commenting more on the fact that people were trying to, like, reclaim Rage Against the Machine as, like...
Oh, well, yeah.
Proto right wing band this entire time.
Well, I think that the release of your album is funny when you think about a band like Rage Against the Machine. Like, obviously, Rage Against the Machine is a band that had a very clear goal in mind in what they support, and they've done it ever since. But you do think about how if a band comes out as overly political, first, it's that. When you look back, you go, oh, they didn't stand for that at all. They stood for other things. They were actually on the other side. Or it's just, well, I just care about the music, as if, like, you can divorce the two.
Well, you know what? It just made me realize how many people over the years have listened to them and just have no grasp of the commentary that they were making on those songs.
Yep, they're out here just, like, singing some of those that work forces or the same that burn crosses, and they're like, that has no meaning. That's just words he wrote.
I have heard that played, that song played at like Islander games where it's some like cop night or something. And like people are just like rocking, like the team comes out from intermission to that. And like people are rocking out. I'm just like, but what the fuck? Like, but I think within all of that is like, that is the gamble of public art, like of releasing art for public consumption, is that if you put music out, and especially if you put music out like through the channels that Rage Against the Machine did, where it, you know, got played everywhere, then inherently it's gonna, you're not gonna control who it gets to. And yep. And a lot of people just consume music as, I think some people go to music for like introspective reasons, or like searching for some sort of reaffirmation of something. And other people literally don't want there to be noise, so they're not thinking about anything. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just, for some people, Rage Against the Machine, it's just loud music that they like to go off to, but not internalize.
Not think about, yeah.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I've heard the opposite instances of, like, you know, people trying to figure out a song about, like, the moon and stars is about, like, you know, a commentary on our sexual prowessness of the early aughts, but it's actually just about a song about moon and stars, like, you know what I mean?
Well, it always goes both ways. It's kind of like, it's both sides of, like, can I like this artist if I don't agree with this artist, or if they're a bad person in my eyes or whatever. I think there's nothing wrong with going to music as just music, just in the same way there's nothing wrong with going to wrestling just to, like, watch wrestling, not care about the stories, not care about the characters, being just going in and taking what you take out of it. It's just funny when it gets wholly, like, misattributed or appropriated for other shit is when I think it starts becoming absurd to me. But yeah. You know, it's as the old adage goes, some of those that work forces are the same that don't agree that you should get the fisherman jersey back in the New York Islanders repertoire.
But it's back, baby.
But it's back. And Desmond's podcast, Through the Island podcast, the premier New York Islanders podcast, podcastosphere. Desmond is, of course, the main host, the top billed host, if you
yes.
would.
Main guy. Top guy.
Which is not because he's any better than Mike, but is just because Mike, as an Avalanche fan, I mean, how can he be, you know, on an Islanders podcast and be of the same billing, right? It just doesn't work that way.
I mean, you know, he is, he claims to be an Islander fan, but he did not root in the Islander Avalanche two head-to-head games during a very tumultuous time for the Islanders this season where they needed a W. I pressed him, who are you rooting for? And he would not say. He would just keep sending back the Rob Lowe picture where he has the NFL hat. And he said he was just hoping for a good game. Said he was just hoping for a good game. And you know what? It's that said everything to me.
Yeah. I believe it was Gandhi that said only criminals take the Fifth Amendment.
You know what? Because it's insinuating that Mike is a criminal, I agree.
So, you know, it's a shame. Great guy, great band, musician as well, but just not the top billed host. And, like, maybe also doesn't want the fisherman jerseys back. But I guess we'll just have to see what plays out on the podcast.
We'll have to see season 3 of Through the Island podcast. It is going to be our highest production level and our most unproductive season yet.
Perfect.
Hopefully,
Mike,
you'll
you're
put
welcome
the,
to confront this anytime. Come on to the podcast whenever you want.
Try to remain neutral, because I am a third party host to Through the Island sometimes. But
are you?
We have to put an end to these fans that existed between 95 and 97. That Fortunate Son plays every time they see the Fisherman logo, and they just get reminded of the fish sticks. They called us names.
It's exactly the same as people who can't get past, like, late era WCW. They're like, wrestling can't ever be good again. I watched the finger poke of doom, and so now the NWO was never good, and WCW was bad the whole time. WCW stands for World Championship Wrestling, which it's a wrestling brand for those of you that tuned out or are only listening because you don't want wrestling. But that's too bad because there is wrestling to talk about because Desmond likes music and Desmond likes politics, loves politics, his favorite thing in the world, loves the Islanders, but loves wrestling as well.
I do.
And of course, that's why he's been on here before. And we were able to give him this much time because we are currently in a little bit of a flux period. We are building up towards both Clash at the Castle as well as All Out for AEW. And we are now in the semifinals finals for the G1 Climax in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So, Desmond, since we spoke about this last week, have you tuned into WWE since a certain someone did a certain something that may or may not have been legal?
Seemingly, it seems like Vince McMahon allegedly. Oh. I don't know.
Client one.
Client one seems to have had several things that he. I'm not even sure you have to say allegedly anymore. By the very nature of
what happened,
the documents.
Yeah, it happened.
They didn't have to take the money. They didn't have to sign those documents.
Dude, wrestling Twitter is I don't know what's worse, like hockey Twitter when there's like an incident of racism that everybody in hockey Twitter or every old head from Ronkonkoma to Saskatchewan like just like pops off about how either the horrible thing that happened wasn't horrible or didn't happen, or if it did happen, it was good that it happened, mm-hmm. or worse things have happened, so why does this thing matter? It's like, yeah, but so with all of that said, like I had watched WWE, and it's like, to me, it is night and day. I remember they said that MSG Raw was apparently still the old guards, right?
It's his dying gasp.
Yeah.
But everything since then has been Triple H, and it just seems, especially because everything that MSG Raw seemed good, but like it seemed like uniquely good, which is why it was surprising when the reports came out that it was the old guard. Right,
it was also coming off of a kind of uniquely strong SummerSlam.
Yes, yes, I would. Yeah, definitely one of the best SummerSlams in a while, I would say. But it just seems like everybody on screen is in a better mood.
Yeah.
Everyone, like every single person in WWE. Is just like, oh, every time I get to be on TV, it matters. And
yeah.
Like, you see that in the performance and you see it in the presentation too. Like, when wrestlers, very rarely do wrestlers lose and look like dorks, in any of the past, like however many weeks it's been, like even, you know, Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander clearly were going to lose to Miz and Ciampa, especially because they're really building up the Ciampa, you know, momentum, like the push there.
Mm-hmm.
But Ali and Alexander were still given like a promo. They were still given like time in the match to like look good. They got to put up a fight in losing. And like it just seems like everybody in the company, like even you know when Ezekiel got powerbombed by Kevin Owens, I was like, oh, he's done.
Bye, pal.
He's not getting any time. But then on Raw last night, like they gave that little funny segment as to like keep the story going. Maybe they're figuring out like what they want to do with it, but like getting to keep that as like, oh, so he's not being screwed over by virtue of clearly being something that Vince thought was funny.
Yeah. And Ryan is, of course, the resident Raw watcher on this show, because if Papa's going to waste time watching wrestling, it ain't going to be on that. But I've tuned in enough to know that, like, I feel that the biggest thing might not even be the product. It's not going to be the presentation, because the presentation is what it is. Triple H is at WWE and has remained there for a reason, learned under Vince and all of his people. But it is an atmosphere in which all of a sudden people who left WWE, who got released from WWE, are like, now rumors are swirling all around about like, oh, people are thinking about coming back, because it's not as if everything that Triple H touches turns to black and gold. Whoo, I'm on fire. My God.
Nice.
My
nice.
God.
Nice. He felt that one.
You know, it's not like everything he's going to do is great. It's not that everything NXT Black and Gold did was great. What people tuned in for, aside from the fact that it was, you were getting like established wrestlers now in higher production values, but the fact that NXT didn't completely shy away from the idea that like the larger wrestling world exists, and the idea that like a storyline will be coherently told, and like your favorites won't always win, but like if there's a push, you have a better shot of a push working than not working, because if Triple H is nothing else, he is a student of his game. He is a student of the game in a very particular era, right? Which is why I think people suddenly expecting Triple H to start like booking like he's Gato or something are off. But people have been almost unanimous in praise for Hunter while he ran NXT. Almost unanimous. Everybody that got released says nothing but like, we loved working with him and Sean. And that's going to be the biggest change, is all of that goodwill that Tony Khan had in early AEW. Now, all of a sudden, it's not, well, you can be here and have freedom, or you can go over there and good luck. Now it's like, hey, man, it might not be that different anymore.
We are about to enter a golden age in, or should I say, like, you know, a silver age of wrestling rumors now, because, you know, you got fucking people like Bruce Pritchard working the phones, calling up Sean Ross Sapp or Meltzer and be like, hey, I heard this guy wants to come back. And they're like, oh, can you elaborate that on that? It's like, nope. And then they immediately go to Twitter and be like, multiple sources have indicated people are calling back Triple H to come back. And listen, that's going to be new territory for AEW, dude. This is going to be very critical. And we, like, me and Damien are not too sure about Tony, because he's known to have some fits from time to time.
I don't know. Yeah,
he's gonna have to be on the. He's gonna be the offense with that. He already kind of like, the rumor came out last week when I forget who it was. It was just like, oh, it'd be interesting if, and he immediately came out afterwards as soon as the story dropped. Like an
it
hour
was,
later,
it was Colin Malachi, I think, where he was like, they're signed a 5-year deal.
Exactly. He just immediately came out and said something like that. And he's going to be doing that a lot, and he can't have any cracks, because what he needs to establish right now is just the guys, when the time comes, be like, no, I bleed for this company. This company means something to me. So they really have to find those guys right now, because I'm telling you, it's going to be a very shaky ship in a couple of years.
Well, what I like is that part of why Tony has been able to be this just like thin-skinned, narcissistic freak that he is on Twitter, to like part of what that was shaped by was he was inherently not as bad as the guy running the other show.
No matter what you thought, he was never going to have as much shit as Vince, ever.
As Vince. And like, so when he was online and funny, it was like, oh yeah, that's the quirky young wrestling owner guy. But then like, you know, when he was being just either off base or just pretty like just clueless to optics and whatnot, you'd be like, yeah, but this show is still better and more coherent as a wrestling show than the 3-hour slog that was Raw and the hit or miss show that was SmackDown.
Yeah.
But now he has to fucking shape up. And now what I'm curious about is how the dynamic of behind the scenes of AEW is going to work, AEW, this was enough. Like, AEW, even before this, had a lot of things that I think they were trying to navigate. I think it's been said in a bunch of places, but having Double or Nothing, which I was at and was amazing, and then Forbidden Door, and then Death Before Dishonor, that seemed like way too much for one guy to focus on, and the shows over that period really suffered for it. And now that you have Triple H taking over WWE, and it really feels like they've shot the shows and they've presented the shows in ways that it visually and thematically is a bit of a it's like a reboot of an old show.
It's gonna be a soft ongoing reboot.
Or an alternate unit, like a multiverse, it's a multiverse situation where the parts are pretty much the same, but now you have a different guy operating it.
Someone called the last WrestleMania like the series finale to like Vince's WWE, even before all this shit went down, and it kind of is when you're looking back on it. But you know what's really great, which we have always ascribed to something that WWE needs to do. Everything has its own sphere around it now. Judgment Day and the women's tag tournament that's going on, Ciampa and Miz, Bobby Lashley with the US belt. Like, everything has like its own, like, okay, I'm gonna pay attention to this when it comes out. I'm not gonna automatically turn off because it's gonna be some goofy Vince shit. Like, I really have to tune in. Like, everything has been given like a weight behind it now, something that was sorely needed, and very much in the sense of where everybody looks happy, everybody's also like passionate and hungry once more too.
And that KO Drew said
exactly, yeah.
My God.
Just heat, just absolute heat. And to your point about how like Tony could never be as bad as Vince, and so you let him be goofy. Another thing working for him was like the idea that he was like youthful. He was the youthful voice in wrestling. He's the elder millennial, which is like stretching it. But here's the thing, guys. Triple H is only 14 years older. All right. Is that sizable? Yes. But it is not 70 fucking six. And Triple H made his hay in an era where work rate started to matter. Vince comes from the days where like work rate was not as important as spectacle, and that carried through his entire time in WWE from the moment WWE became his instead of his father's, and even before. You now have Triple H, who showed with NXT Black and Gold that he very much understands what the wrestling world is. Now, you can have arguments all day long about who you think, on the one hand, WWE is probably never going to let their people do what they do in AEW. But on the flip side, Triple H seems to maybe be more respected by the people in the locker room than Tony does. And and because WWE is bigger, it has more people that you can talk to. And that's something that Triple H tried to address immediately. But, the honeymoon is over. And so, Des, to flip that earlier question, and you said it earlier, but where since Triple H took over, how have you felt about AEW?
So I think AEW, I've actually liked what AEW has done, which was, and part of it, I think, especially for the, not this past week. I mean, it still continued this past week, but I was afraid that they were going to, I was afraid Tony was going to panic and overplay the WWE guy presentation. And I like that you, like, was the first week that you got the Stobbs Hearts, the Hobbs Starks turn?
I
think that was the first week. Like, there's been such a emphasis on building up AEW originals that I think is really good. Not just originals, but guys that they should have. Like, it was the right kind of, like, it wasn't an overreaction. It was definitely a clear shift, but an appropriate reaction, in my opinion. And now that people are getting healthy again, it feels like, okay, they have their things together, and I'm hopeful that it seems like they're kind of booking. So All Out is in like 3 weeks.
Yeah. So building to that, yeah, All Out is September 4th, and Clash at the Castle is also September 4th, or is it the 3rd, Ryan?
I think it's the, isn't it the 3rd?
It is the 3rd. It's the 3rd.
One is the Saturday, like the WWE one is the Saturday. It's,
yep,
an afternoon.
Yep.
And
so that's the 3rd, and All Out is the 4th.
Sunday. It feels like All Out is actually weirdly getting the WWE criticized type of booking, where like it's jamming,
yeah, a lot,
the storylines are being jammed together. Part of that seems circumstantial of how many injuries they had, and but the fact that this is going to be such a big pay-per-view for the company. Like, what I'm curious about is the way we've talked about how like a switch is flipped in WWE in a good direction for the performers. I'm really curious, like, if you're an AEW, I guess everyone's being pushed at all times on both shows, because if you don't get the deal, if you're not getting treated well, in the place that you're at, but you're putting on a good show, you're getting over with enough people, then there's a plausible enough reason for the other company to get you, which then makes it a plausible, it puts pressure on the company that has that wrestler to actually book them well. So I'd like to think this is just, we're finally getting the way they've said, like, you know, competition is good. Competition was good more for fans that watch AEW than anybody else, because like WWE struggled to be consistently watchable, whereas AEW always was watchable, for the most part at least. And I'm really curious as to like how All Out's going to go. It does feel like I'm wondering if MJF returns at All Out.
So
talk about a storyline, yeah, that we forgot about. Not forgot about, but I mean, like, it just, it was the hottest goddamn thing in wrestling, and then in the next week it was just like, oh, okay.
Which really leads credence to the idea that, like, or it muddies the water significantly. Is this a work? Is this not a work? Because how do you cut that promo and then do nothing to follow
it's
it up?
Crazy.
But let's bring this now back to what we think is going to be happening, and we'll close out with New Japan, because I didn't talk enough about it last time. So, you know, we need to flesh out the next 4 hours. So right now, there's a few things confirmed for All Out, or seemingly confirmed. So as of airing, when this airs, we will know who the Young Bucks surprise mystery partner is as AEW introduces the trio belts. Now, there are plenty of arguments to be made that AEW is just adding belts that they really shouldn't. However, it seems that they have utilized the All-Atlantic belt the way I was hoping they would, by having Pac defend against people all over the world, doing it in Rev Pro, having matches with international superstars on Dark. And so as long as Tony continues doing that, then I don't really think that belt is going to interfere too much in anything, because it's essentially the TNT title just with people outside of the company or people that don't live in the States. So I think that the trios belts will work, but it depends on what they do. Right now you've got a trios tournament and it's set to start or will have started by Dynamite tomorrow, right? We know it's going to be Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly versus the Young Bucks and their mystery partner after they unsuccessfully tried to recruit Hangman after Hangman rescued them against the Undisputed Elite. Or maybe now they're just going to be the Undisputed Era. I don't know what they're going to be. Whatever. Anyway, Andrade, Rush, and Dragon Lee, Los Ingobernables, are going to be taking on Private Party and Matt Hardy. Although, Ryan, remind me, am I talking out of my ass? Did that match happen already, or is that happening tomorrow? I think it's tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, yes.
Yes, okay. And actually, it's... I don't think
Matt
it's...
Matt Hardy's so rough, man.
Well, you know what? I might be wrong. It might not actually be...
It's a rough watching the man work.
Let me not speak outside of stupidity here, because... yeah, I'm sorry. So, what the... It's going to be... La Facción Ingobernable, Andrade El Idolo, Rush, and Dragon Lee against the Young Bucks, and we don't know. It's going to be Death Triangle, Pac, Penta Escuro, and Rey Fénix against the United Empire, Will Ospreay and Aussie Open, Mark Davis and Kyle Fletcher. Love that Will Ospreay is going straight from the G1 into this, and based on how tomorrow goes, could be maybe having a briefcase with him. Then on the other side of the bracket is the House of Black, Malakai Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews versus the Dark Order, Evil Uno, Alex Reynolds, John Silver, and or Press Advance. We don't know which one of those four, but we know Hangman will be cornering them, not in it. And then the Trust Busters, which is Ari Daivari, Parker Bordeaux, who some people might recall as the NCAA. Was he an NCAA standout? Or no, he was just a guy that everyone said was going to be the next Brock Lesnar. That's him.
Oh, he's not even he's not even a collegiate wrestler. That's where Jim Ross found him.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. That's what it is. I just can't find it immediately, and we're just going to move on from it. And Sonny Kiss versus Best Friends, Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Trent. So All Out is going to feature two high-profile trios against one another. The big rumor is that tomorrow's Dynamite is going to have the long-awaited return of Kenny, by God, Omega. And that, therefore, you might just get the Young Bucks, the Elite, the proper Elite, against maybe the Dark Order or House of Black. But it's anyone's guess what happens there. To Desmond's earlier point, the star power is coming back. CM Punk returned last week in a huge surprise. Nobody expected to see him for at least another couple of weeks. So automatically, All Out has Jon Moxley versus CM Punk. I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that that might be the biggest matchup AEW can make. I think the only one you could realistically make bigger would be like CM Punk versus Kenny or versus Bryan Danielson. But like, I don't see how you get much bigger than Moxley Punk. So already that's huge for the headlining.
Are they still teasing Hangman joining with the Young Bucks?
No. So what they did,
Hangman
in the last
being
episode
that
of Dynamite,
that guy you hung out with in elementary school, and then you got to middle school, and all of a sudden he realized that his friends are nerds and has to hang out with the cool guys.
Basically, Matt Jackson gave like a big, genuine apology to Hangman about how like the money and fame got to him and how like he got weird and he treated Hangman like crap and he wants to bring back the Hung Bucks one more time. And Hangman was basically like, you know, I appreciate that, but you said you wanted to tell me that you were proud of me when I won the belt, but you didn't. The Dark Order did.
That was so good.
That's who I have to corner. So like, it was weird because Hangman didn't exactly rebuff the apology, and his logic is sound. Look, you guys fucking sucked, and I was shitty. He said that before his match with Kenny, but like, the Dark Order stood by me, and that's what he should do in kayfabe. But he notably did not apologize back. So like, we don't know what's going to happen with that, nor do we know how Kenny comes back, if he comes back. Then after that, a lot more is up in the air. We're probably going to get Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm, which I hate to say it, but Thunder Rosa's title reign has just not been good, and
it's the most disappointing title reign in a while.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, look, even beyond that, just when Thunder Rosa came in, she felt fucking special, man. She felt like one of the best wrestlers in the world.
What has she been given the last couple months?
I don't know that I can say that's all her. Like, yes, she hasn't been given much, but she just, like, there was a charisma that is not there.
There was a spark that she had when I first started seeing her that hasn't been there. And again, like Damian said, that's not all her. I mean, really the thing that I think is AEW is going to stay fucked on is, like, Triple H has done such a good job at building and helping foster a great environment for women's wrestling.
And
Toni hasn't. And part of that is, I think I've said it on one of, I think this is what, the third time I've been on here. I've been on here quite a few times.
I believe you and our good friend Bryce Donovan are either tied or he's got one over on you.
Oh my God! Damn it!
Who's
going to
be the first? Who's
going to
be the first Booker T of the show?
I'm going to be the first five time. Oh my God! Let's get it. But I said that, like, it's in general, it's not my pass to give on, like, hey, you know, it's hard to book wrestling, but like, I do think women's wrestling is so programmatically deprived of, like, dignity and respect as a practice and an avenue to build up that WWE, by virtue of being the only actual place for a while, like they have so much talent, and I because of that, like, I think AEW is at, like, you could say, argue is at a little bit of a disadvantage. Although that's why I think that's part of why how they handle Jade Cargill and how they transition her. The problem is that Jade Cargill at this point should be in the women's division, and that would then help redefine and change the dynamic of the women's division, because the women's division of AEW, in a way, it's actually hurt by the presence of two belts, makes it so that, like, I think their division was not built up adequately enough, where having multiple belts didn't kind of complicate things. Whereas, you know, it's in theory, like, how different could things have been if you could have had matches where it was Nyla Rose versus Thunder Rosa versus Jade Cargill versus Toni Storm. You know, like a match like that would have been, like, but you don't, like, with the title on the line, you don't have that opportunity. And I just think that's AEW, like,
that's their fault. Yeah. I think Ryan made the point last week that, like, if AEW had done from jump, if AEW had done a better job of building their women's division, given the incredible amount of talent on that roster, maybe there are no rumors about Sasha Banks and Naomi coming back to WWE, because, like, maybe Sasha Banks would have already been over there. Like, and that is it. Look, she's got a connection to WWE, and with Hunter coming in, like you said, you know, Vince is a monster person, but he did get out of his own way and then, like, create what is what, I mean, call it what it is. Becky Lynch is probably the biggest star in women's wrestling, possibly history. At the very least, she is, I don't even know who I'd realistically put on her level, because, like, was Moolah a draw, or did she just keep the fucking title hostage?
Trish Stratus is probably her.
Trish, yeah, that's a good point. So, like, that is on them, but I didn't even think about that before. It's a great point. Look, Jade has improved leaps and bounds since coming in, but because you made her this unbeatable monster that then became the first TBS champion, you have created a situation where, like, how the fuck do you put anybody else over? I've been watching the product. Does anybody think Athena, like, has shown enough that she should win that match? I don't think so. I liked Ember Moon, but, like, what has she done different than anyone else? Chris Statlander was going to be that person.
Yeah, that's the one that hurts.
Unfortunately, she's going to be out 6 to 8 months. Her knee just fucking erupted, and, like, so obviously that's not booking's fault, but, like, they also didn't maybe pull the trigger earlier than they should have, but... Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem in the women's booking, and that just is what it is. You know, Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm on paper should be a good match. Hopefully Toni Storm wins and we can kind of move on from that era. Jade Cargill versus Athena. Athena, I don't think she's the one to take it off of Jade, but hopefully we get a good match. And then there's a lot else up in the air. Like, the only other things we can think about is, like, Christian versus Jungle Boy, which that feud's been handled real pop properly.
Yeah, for sure.
Christian knows how to fucking work a mid-card heel
better
than anyone.
He is the Elvis of the mid-card division.
It's been a little bit of a diminishing returns. Like, the first promo was like, damn, and then it became it just became such a one-note.
Well, you know, it's problematic because Jungle Boy still can't really cut a promo. Like, He I don't want to say, like, he's awful, but, like, that first promo that Christian cut, the first two even, like you said, was like, holy fuck. And Jungle Boy came back with some fire, but not enough. So now Christian just needs to get that ass whooping, and hopefully we do something interesting with Luchasaurus. Like, maybe Luchasaurus turns on him, actually, or, you know, we don't know.
He really called out his...
I love the Kane music. the Luchasaurus Kane
I mean, no
music.
Reason he couldn't be a Kane-like figure, right? Him, Lance Archer, you got people like that.
We're just skipping the four or five years that Kane was, like, a plausible
main eventer.
Immediately going to Talking Kane.
Yeah, talking Kane.
But you know what Jungle Boy did a great job at was calling out Christian's divorced dad energy.
Was like his one real good barb.
Oh my god.
But then they had, like, him charge Christian and Luchasaurus, headbutted Pat Buck. So obviously, like, there's a darkness to Luchasaurus that implies perhaps that everything is not as hunky-dory as we think. And then it looks like we might get Eddie Kingston versus Sammy Guevara, which at this point, Eddie can probably sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, so that's fine. And then things are a lot more up. Do we realistically see a world where Bryan Danielson or Hangman don't have matches on this, you know? Or Jericho, you've got Ricky Starks and Hobbs, which definitely deserves.
Gotta be there. Starks and Hobbs. It has to be a match, and I would argue maybe make that your opening match.
Yeah,
for All Out, because, like, those guys, they're, you know, I forgot sometimes, like, you hear on Busted Open or some other fucking place where, like, this attitude of, If you're not last, go first. And there is something to, like, the pay-per-view you lead with, like, the match that opens a pay-per-view, like an album, the sequencing matters. And I feel like opening with Starks and Hobbs, I think that feels right, although they love opening with Eddie Kingston matches, so I could see that too.
Well, it would help elevate that feud also as, like, we are treating this feud as a big deal, because you're right. Ryan and I talk about this all the time. This is not the old days where the first match is like the, you know, whatever, you don't got to care about this match. Like, they
Gunn versus Hardcore Holly.
Yeah. You're not getting that anymore.
Title.
And that is a feud that should help define both of those men if done right, because Team Taz did ultimately work for everybody involved. And this should help define those two. And you have to catch lightning in a bottle with both of them, but in particular Ricky Starks. That is a man that, listen, don't give him the time he wants. That is a man that will succeed in Triple H's WWE.
Oh yeah,
he will set the world on fire in Triple H's WWE.
Even Hobbs too. Yeah.
So we don't know what's going on with the tag belts, because FTR's got every single belt, but they're also, like, backing up Wardlow with Jay Lethal. And it's funny because we are 2 weeks-ish out, 3 weeks. And if you look at Clash at the Castle, it's a much smaller lineup, but everything feels so much more solidified. Roman versus Drew McIntyre is a match that's only happened, I think, 3 times max, but 2 times in the last, like, 3 years. Their match at Survivor Series was fucking awesome.
Awesome.
This match, and it does actually have intrigue, because I think you can equally make the argument that, like, no, Drew McIntyre isn't the guy that needs that rub, while simultaneously saying Drew McIntyre will fucking, they will tear the roof off of that place if Drew McIntyre wins there, and, like, maybe he is the perfect person to go with.
I think it's time to elevate Drew to God status in WWE.
Agreed. He beat Brock in front of no one. This pays that back.
Yeah, I mean, it, and I'd like to think Triple H might, or at least Triple H as a suit, might believe in paying it back more than Vince ever did.
Yeah, Roman's done a really great job with this character. I don't think it's like reached its logical conclusion, but I think the more you string it out, the more you're getting diminishing returns. The more you're like, who the fuck, who gets this rub at this point?
It's too far. It's too far to WrestleMania to. If there's no heavyweight title until May, like no title change and no titles
until
frequently
April.
On,
and then The Rock is going to win it,
and then The Rock wins.
It can't.
Or realistically, The Rock loses it is what would happen. They'd have Roman go over on The Rock.
Yeah,
I wonder. Yeah, and I wonder if, like, you know, there's been all sorts of talk of about. What, like, you know, who's Reigns going to drop the belt to? And it feels like, and I know there was talk that, like, oh, well, if you have him lose, but he only loses one of the titles, and mm-hmm. it's not like that.
You can't do that anymore.
It's not like yeah. that. You can't do that anymore. And you have to make a booking decision. And I don't think, like, it's one of those things, I don't think Roman is going to, I don't think he's going to lose, but at the same time, it's like, Why do any of this
mm-hmm.
if not, and if anything, like, Drew winning would get a huge pop, and it would pop the audience at home, because people don't think Roman is going to
lose. Absolutely.
So it would be great to do so, and I guess there's concern, like, cause I do think part of me is like, oh well, it would be great. Whoever beats Roman is made, and I do think that the Cody versus Roman story has, like, so much to it, but
you don't have
again,
to wait.
Too...
You don't have to wait.
Yeah.
And to that point, like, Ryan and I, we go through history all the time on this podcast, and we go through champions of the past and superstars of the past. And how often has a wrestling company got it wrong because they didn't just ride the guy who was fucking over? Is there a single face on that roster that is more over than Drew McIntyre at that level? I'm not sure that there is. And that's, like, no disrespect to someone like Bobby Lashley, who the crowds are finally eating up, who's doing some of the best work of his life, to face Randy Orton, who the crowd was loving, to Riddle. Seth gets great responses, but he is not a face. Like, Drew is their biggest face, and he is the only one with whom Roman cannot be like, oh, I beat you down. Like, their match was very back and forth.
Yeah.
I think Roman won clean, but I don't know. Maybe
no,
you just...
No, it was an Uso jumping.
It was an Uso interference thing.
Yeah.
So then, look, if it ain't going to be Seth, ride the fucking guy who came out at SummerSlam, held up a claymore, made some jokes, and the crowd fucking erupted. And that, especially yeah. after that promo with Owens. Fuck it, let it ride. Then you're going to yeah. have Liv Morgan versus Shayna, which Liv Morgan's match with Ronda ended in a way I really didn't expect. And it does kind of sell this idea that Liv is scrappy and we love her for that, but can she beat somebody at that caliber? And boy, if Triple H just doesn't love him some Shayna.
Which makes me wonder if which there's intrigue there. I don't know how that match is going to go. I could see it going either way also.
So could I. I could see her winning on a roll up. I could see, but I was not Shayna's biggest fan in NXT, but she brought undisputed credibility to the top of that division. You're finally getting Seth Rollins versus Riddle, which is fucking awesome. And then you're going to get maybe the most Triple H match of all time in Bianca Belair, Asuka, and Alexa Bliss versus Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky, aka Io Shirai. Even if it was just those four matches, that's a very strong fucking card, but it will be more. So yeah. I feel like WWE's the one riding the momentum right now, and it's going to be up to AEW to really flesh that card out if they have any hope of competing.
Also, people had a problem last night with Theory and Ziggler headlining, which, you know, production-wise is one conversation to be had, but you got to start building up these guys, man. You sort of got to give them those opportunities to shine. And I know that Theory is a pragmatic character right now. I think just the way Vince was presenting him just really wasn't getting to us, but he really killed it last night. And obviously Ziggler is just the GOAT when it comes to taking any match and then making, he knows what he's doing. And so like he really came out strong at the end of that. His finisher is actually pretty good. It's like a, it's like a flip into the, it's like a neck breaker.
It's like a fireman's carry into like a knee drop, a knee drop to the face.
Is it the ATL or the A-Town Down?
I think it's called A-Town Down.
Yeah.
Where's it called? The A-Town
Down. Is it from Atlanta?
It's one of them. I believe so.
That would make sense. But either way, yeah, I think ultimately you have to build these guys up. Austin Theory is fucking good. And if that wasn't enough, this is without AJ Styles being on this show. If you get Sasha and Naomi coming back into the fold, if you end up getting Johnny Gargano back, now that you've got Karrion Kross actually looking like a threat and not wearing a gimp suit, like WWE's riding momentum that AEW had, and it's going to be up to AEW. If there was a time where you needed Bryan Danielson and CM Punk and Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega and the like, it's now.
Yeah.
Now is when you fucking pull that trigger and you make All Out the biggest goddamn spectacle you can. Because this is WWE without Cody, who I'll joke all day long. Cody is a goddamn megastar and he's shown up like 3 weeks over there.
Yeah, when he wins the belt, it's going to be crazy.
It's
going to
be insane.
It feels like whoever has the belt now in WWE is actually holding the belt, keeping it warm for Cody, because like he's winning the Rumble and it's not going to matter because he's a sick bastard, man. That fucking his fucking, what was it?
He tore his pec off the bone.
Tore his pec and then had one of the best Hell in a Cell matches of the last like 15 years.
The amazing, that was like a I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me moment. That was him, like his madness and his like sick, perverse obsession with like winning the belt that eluded his dad came out in him subjecting everybody to watching him wrestle that match like that, where like everybody in the arena at home was just like, is this happening?
Yeah, remember that Cody you were watching in AEW for the last year? He's dead.
And we've joked enough about that, but all that matters is when it mattered, WWE presented Cody Rhodes like a goddamn megastar, and he got himself over with the crowd, had a connection instantly without saying a single word. But that trilogy with Seth was one hell of a way to go out, and he's going to be fucking red hot. So it's going to be interesting. We've got a lot going on stateside, and I'm really looking forward to when Ring of Honor can become its own thing, because AEW can't really afford to run that at the same time on their programming. But people like Samoa Joe and Claudio and Mercedes Martinez, they need spotlight there. They need time. So I'm hoping that gets solved soon. But it's a fucking interesting time. You know, I feel that wrestling has just been so high quality for a while now, but you had that like, but WWE is doing whatever. But now I don't know what the fuck to expect. And that's kind of exciting. I don't like rooting for billion-dollar corporations. And like, Hunter may not be as bad as Vince, but he's no fucking like saint in his own world. But neither is Tony Khan. And I like WWE being interesting makes the wrestling world better, for better or for worse. So obviously, Des, we've kept you a long time here. So all I'm going to say about New Japan is that the G1 semifinals and finals are wrapping up. We're going to be having the semifinals coming up tomorrow, and then the finals on the 18th. The winners of the four blocks, Kazuchika Okada winning the A block, Tetsuya Naito winning the B, I'm sorry, actually, Tama Tonga giving Jay White, reigning IWGP heavyweight champion, his only loss on the final night to move on against Okada, who he beat in last year's G1. C block winner Tetsuya Naito after defeating Zack Sabre Jr. in under 2 minutes. My poor Zack. Who then proceeded to have a massive meltdown, as did Jay White, by just screaming fuck on the floor for 2 minutes and leaving. And the D block, because Gato's a coward and didn't want to book a 7-way tie, ends up being won by Will Ospreay. So tomorrow you're going to get Okada versus Tama Tonga. You're going to get Ospreay versus Naito for the first time ever. And then the following night, you're going to get the winners of those. Desmond, I'm assuming you probably don't catch a ton of New Japan, right? Which
No. Where can you watch that?
It's on tomorrow. New Japan World. And I have no problem giving you my password if you just want to watch it. I'm the only one that uses it, so.
All right. I'd love to. It's tomorrow. It's yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's like to. Tomorrow. It's tomorrow at 6 p.m. their time, so I think that's like 2 a.m. our time.
So tonight.
So it's like tonight. So you'll just catch it tomorrow.
So 3 hours. Okay. Oh, okay. I don't have to watch it live.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's not gonna matter. You won't get it spoiled. And in the same thing, the following day, it'll be like 2 or 3 a.m. that day. So I'll send you my password and stuff. And I'll give you my matches of the tournament. There have been a lot of great ones. Shingo Takagi versus Will Ospreay was an instant classic, as all of their others have been. So I'll give you like a little list. Also, Ryan left. I don't know what that means. Let me call him real quick so that we can wrap this up and get everybody home. No.
I'm already home.
Hey, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on with my internet tonight.
Oh, your internet got out.
Yeah, just give me 5 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Is it still going?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. One second.
It may need a host automatically.
Oh, great. Okay. All right. So, 2 minutes.
Deary me. So while we wait for Ryan to come back, who is just the most AWOL host of all time, that the G1 climax, it's been a great one, but you guys hear me prattle on about it enough every time an episode happens, so I just won't do it this time, and you guys get a nice little break. How exciting for you. Everybody, all five of you, so lucky. So Ryan, while we wait for Ryan, what are our final thoughts about the wrestling landscape right now? How are we feeling about it? What are we expecting? What are we hoping for?
So, I am hoping for, a new era, like an actual new era of like it's two companies that are competing, but the wrestlers are pushing by virtue of the way that wrestlers, I think, have more solidarity with mm-hmm. each other now than in the previous competition days, where WWF and WCW guys like did not see eye to eye because they were like about their company. I'd like to see now it be an era of competition that is kind of like I intimated earlier, that wrestlers making the most of the opportunities that they get, which is the thing that they were bullshitly, you know, told about brass rings and whatnot. They are living brass rings just by virtue of putting on good shows that get over with the wrestling crowd that now is trying to watch both shows, specifically with this idea of who is going to leave where or what. You know, I really hope that, you know, we benefit from that type of landscape, and the wrestlers will be better compensated for it. Because, I mean, really, they should unionize, but it's wrestlers inherently are used to works and working, and therefore they just, the idea of anything, as anything that requires as much solidarity and belief that the other person is on the same page with you as, well, it's ironic because they trust each other to do the wrestling with each other.
To not like negotiate with one another.
To not negotiate better, you know, conditions of their labor and compensation. But if you don't get a wrestling union, at the very least getting that where they're able to win out, and as
I agree, WCW and WWF, like, wrestlers ultimately kind of won the Monday Night Wars more than anyone else, because contracts were suddenly much larger and people who expected to not be able to make a living off of wrestling were able to, and people who might not have had a shot in other eras got a shot and became stars as a result. So yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. Ultimately, we say this all the time, like, you know, kill your idols. Don't fucking stand for billionaires. Don't give a shit about companies like that. You don't want WWE or AEW to win. Like, they're not actually inherently better than one or the other. You want the wrestlers to win. You want the people who sacrifice their bodies and their families and their social lives and everything to entertain knuckleheads like us. You want them to be the winners in this. And like you said, if we're not going to be able to unionize, which I really do hope one day ends up happening, I hope that, like, people like Freddie Prinze Jr., I hope that his promotion
damn gets, it I was about to mention that
I hope that his promotion gets better. And that's what happens when you're not here, Ryan. I say all your points for you.
You know, that may change the industry. It will have
if
to
they, if it's gets SAG people SAG yeah, credits. Absolutely.
So, wait, can you elaborate on that a little
so,
bit?
So, Freddie Prinze Jr. being a member of the Screen Actors Guild, he's a mm-hmm. union member. That is the unionized force of Hollywood. They are entitled to health insurance. They are entitled to, you know, normal benefits that come with the union.
Level of expectation for their job sites. And he was a writer for WWE, right?
Right, correct. Yep. I'm sure he has multiple, he's probably in the Screenwriters Guild, all that stuff. But, you know, regardless, he wants to start up a promotion that gets wrestlers to become SAG members because they're entitled to it. I think the only requirement is that you need, like, some certain amount of hours of screen time where, you know, people in WWE can easily knock that 100%. Out in a week, 2 weeks.
Man.
And if he's able to do that, then, you know, all the wrestlers are going to be clamoring for that, because it's kind of been like the one dirty secret that, like, oh, we don't, you know, I'm sure they have some shitty Blue Cross Blue Shield plan, if that, but it's like, yeah, no, we don't.
It's something more than relying on the fucking charity of people like Vince to be like, oh, exactly. We got you, pal. Like, so think about that. Fred Jones might single-handedly save wrestling, folks. But he's no joke. Like, he worked with WWE twice. Like, the man knows and respects wrestling, and that's the type of shit you want to see. But ultimately, even if these things don't happen, like Desmond said, we want to be able to just get them some better fucking working conditions, you know, buy your own brass rings.
the thought about the SAG aspect, it makes me wonder how John Cena felt when he started doing non-WWE
movies. Oh, this is great!
And he found it, and when he found out that, like, the guy that, like, is a prominent extra, like, has, like, the same dental, like the same, like, medical care that, like John Cena is, like, one of, like, 10 people.
One of 10 people that gets WWE. Teeth.
Yeah. Like, I wonder how he took that moment of, like, I think I'm just going to stick
with this for a while.
One.
Yeah. So as we finally wrap this long boy up, which, Desmond, we hope we have not kept you past bedtime. I know it is late on the East Coast where we all are.
No, I'm just going to put on what we do in the shadows right
Good.
After this.
Perfect. So as we wrap up then, Ryan, do you have a legend killer for one of us?
You kind of took my second one from last week because I got a little...
You got ahead of yourself, didn't
trigger
you?
Trigger happy. Yeah, I did. Should we show Desmond that one? Because that's a really good
Whatever
one.
You got, send it in the chat.
Okay.
My wife now knows the lyrics to that song because of CM Punk, so I think that's fun.
Oh, man. I'm kind of over CM Punk, though, to be honest with you, like, significantly.
Well, look, him being around is a big deal, but I'm definitely ready for, like, character, and it looked like we were starting to get that once he won the belt. I didn't.
The honeymoon is definitely
no,
over.
I mean,
now
it's
now
time
realizing,
to be. Punk.
Oh, wait, it's like, oh, CM Punk is back. Oh, that. Yeah. Okay. Now I remember.
It's a big deal. He's a huge star. His in-ring psychology is as good as ever, but he was never the most athletic. And you know, to his credit, that tag match after he won the belt, when everyone was like, "Oh, he just looked real bad." At least, like, he was working a broken foot. So, but I expect more now.
Oh, I know this
Damn
one.
It.
Just, you did this one already.
I did it with you. I didn't do it with Desmond.
Okay, well, Desmond, who is it?
This is Walter, or his unfortunate
Gunther.
Name, Gunther.
Yeah, that's him.
You know, I'm glad you did this, because it was something about just the way WWE is trending. Almost certain Survivor Series is going to be... Gunther versus Lashley.
And it's going to be so good. His match with Shinsuke was fucking awesome.
I didn't see it. I saw like the final sequences that they
have not missed. They have not missed with Walter. They haven't missed with his presentation, and like him slimming down is going to do such wonders for his career, but he's still so scary looking.
He walked by. I saw him in person a couple months back.
Really?
Outside the Philippine consulate, because there was a demonstration going on outside the Philippine consulate. And I think it was like, I think maybe it was back in June or May, wrestling was at the Garden. And he, like, because it's the consulate's on like 45th and 8th,
yeah,
or something like that. So it's like really prominent touristy area, and like he's kind of a one of one.
Yeah,
looking
person. It's either him or it's not.
It was when he was big. It was when he was a bit of a chungus, and now that he's a chiseled boy, like it was just like, oh, I saw him, and instantly was like, oh, like, yeah, that's. I'm not. There's no doubt you're the one guy that looks this way.
You are
now
the big
boy. Now that he's chiseled, it's even more jarring. And even like now, I mean,
he looks great. Does. He looks fucking great in person. Like he looks like he's gonna do great, because he's a guy that Vince obviously loved. And
what do you mean you bettered yourself? What do you mean you bettered your life? He doesn't
Triple
look doesn't look intimidating
love.
Anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, he looks like a guy that, oh, you're somebody, right? Like if you don't watch wrestling,
that's
you're like, oh,
yeah.
you put a lot into looking this way. You clearly put a lot of work into looking and staying looking like
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely.
So what's it for?
100%. Well, that's fine. I didn't use the picture last week, so we'll use it for this one. But, you know, it's nice for Ryan to lose for a while, you know?
Terrible streak. I'm on a Yankees X streak.
You're gonna have to like start fucking busting out childhood photos of Freddie Blassie or some shit. So
who is this? This is Vern Gagne when he was two. It's like, oh yeah, I knew that.
This is Vern Gagne when his mother was still pregnant with him. So to wrap up, we will not be talking about what are we listening to, because what we're listening to is where we've always been and where we are going.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to be listening to. That's what we're doing. So instead of anything else, Desmond, you have earned this. The floor is yours. Plug all of the things.
All right. You can follow Career Day at Career Day NY on all the social programs. Maybe because I'm thinking about how it's socially programming us to identify with these websites. But yeah, at Career Day NY for all bellwether social media stuff. We have, as we alluded to earlier, we have some shows coming up. We're going to be in Philly from August 26th through 28th. We're going to be in Philly, Ridgewood, and New Brunswick. The Philly show is at a house, and the Jersey show are at a house. You're gonna have to DM us for the addresses there. Real Punk Hours, and the New York release show at Ridgewood is going to be at the Windjammer. So it would be really great to see a lot of people roll through. You can follow me at When Dogs Dream on Instagram or at GoldMember182 on Twitter. We're not going to get into why I don't have a Twitter account under that name anymore. That's a story for a previous time. I've been censored by the government.
You're really actively telling the story as you say you're not going to talk about it.
Yes. Yes. But, we have more shows coming up, in the fall. We're going to be playing Brooklyn. We might be playing Long Island. We might be playing New England. So please, wherever you're listening to it, to this podcast from, likely I am trying to play a show near you. So please tap in. And I also wanted to plug a couple organizations that I have organized with and around the New York Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. You can follow them on Instagram at NYCHRP. You can also follow Anak Bayan Queens. I will, now as I say it out loud, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have to send you the links so you can at least
we'll put it in the episode
description. Cool awesome. Malaya Movement, those are great Filipino Philippine human rights and Philippine solidarity organizations. General Anti-Imperialist Organizing, DSA Anti-War, as well as the DSA International Committee. And for immigration-related matters, Make the Road New York is a great organization that a friend of mine, Angel, works at. So I will send that link. But yeah, there's always so many more. I actually have a batch of solidarity links that maybe I'll put together and try to send your way. But just want to impress upon people the need to, whether it's the organizations I send or whatever rallies are going on for whatever part of this hellscape is being fought at the plaza near your apartment or whatever, it's important to actually go to those things and find out what work is being done. Because as good as these songs might feel to sing along to, you know, there's many more people that don't hear these songs and frankly don't care to listen to music because they are under too much state violence or repression to really feel that jazzed up about this anthemic song. So whatever you care about, I guarantee there's somebody within 5 mile radius of you actively organizing on it in ways that you can engage in.
Couldn't have said any of these things better myself, and so I won't try to. And of course, you can also catch Desmond on Through the Island podcast. Believe that is TT Island.
TT Island. TT Island Pod. Let me see. That is the that gets to exist as a part of me that I spend time in. But TT Island Podcast is what you can follow us at. If you are a hockey fan, check it out. If you're not, but you've ever been curious about what a podcast sounds like when both of the people that are doing the episode are actively quarreling with each other for over 40 episodes, it's good for that too.
Ryan and I are a little too chummy, unfortunately.
Yeah, I noticed from listening to many other podcasts, you seem to try to it's good to try to establish a working rapport with your partner, whereas we have become more there's been a lot more animus towards each other as the podcast has gone on, which I think is fun.
We tried to do that, but then WWE just stopped caring about things, so Raw Ryan was dead for a little bit, but Raw Ryan is returning, baby.
Yeah, but like,
oh, he's back. Oh my god, Triple H got him back.
It'll depend on whether we start getting Slipknot as the opening for Raw or not. If we get Slipknot back, then all bets are off.
All bets are off the table.
Yeah, animosity is good. Doughboys does a lot of animosity like that as well, if you like fast food. But anyway, Desmond has his hands in many cookie jars, many pies. He wears many hats. We will put these links up. Be sure to purchase Where We've Always Been, wherever you like to purchase things. I did mine through Bandcamp because I wanted a pre-release thing. Make sure to go support them everywhere. Support Old Press Records, but like only them. Like, I'm sure the other bands are good, but like, I'm not going to plug them. I don't know who they are. So I will only plug this one.
They're
fantastic. And we will be having Desmond on very soon. But for anybody in this area, please remember, as he said, your hometown show, your record release show will be happening imminently.
August 27th, roll through the windjammer.
Right. All right. So we will let you all go in no peace, because no justice, no peace. So, for Desmond, for Ryan, for myself, this has been the most electrifying, must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. This has been FFC.